So welcome to, I don't know, is this, do we call this round two of the prison wallets or up to round three?
Maybe just prison wallets redox? I don't know. But
Yeah, that works for me. So we took a pretty long break, mainly COVID, but just to say COVID stuff. And yeah, now we're back for a new run of episodes. So I'm Keith and this is Ray.
I'm Ray. That's Keith.
All right, this episode on the prison wallets. So I just thought it was funny, this movie, The Sadness, where you were like, oh, this is a, you know, I'm kind of going in blind. I don't really know anything about this movie, but you were like, oh yeah, we should check this out. And you were reminding your fiance, like, hey, remember we watched this movie, the one where the dude fucks the chick in the eye socket? She's like, oh yeah, that is a good movie.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. I borrowed it from my 4K guy about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and never got around to watching it. And then when we were at one of the conventions that we go to, like a horror convention or something like that, I saw a copy there for like $15. I'm like, well, I'll just fucking buy a copy for $15. And then, you know, I returned the copy I had borrowed back to its owner, and yeah, it sat on a shelf for like 6 months, and then, you know, New Year's, I believe it was New Year's Day, like early New Year's Day came, and we were looking for something to do because we both were off work. So we popped it in, and, you know, not I knew, I heard it was like super violent, and that appeals to me, of course. So we threw it in, and sure enough, it lived up to that expectation. It was so fucking good.
Well, this is cool too. I'm interested because, you know, we just presumed it was South Korean because South Korea kind of is the only country besides America that makes like really cool, you know, really slick looking movies. And that's kind of neat because so I was traveling around Asia last year and so I was in South Korea and it was even their TV looks like that. I was surprised. Like if you flip through the channels in Japan, everything looks like crap. Japanese stuff just doesn't look that good. Korean stuff, even their crappy like cooking shows, everything looks beautiful, or K-pop videos or whatever. So I was like, nice, all right, let's hook it up, South Korea. But then I just did the quick Google. Three interesting things right away. So yeah, rather than South Korea, it's actually Taiwanese, which I was also in Taiwan. I was in Taipei for 3 months. So I think that'll be interesting because like I just noticed little stuff now in South Korean movies, like just stupid things, but like watching Train to Busan, I'm like, oh, there's those little coffee machines from the train station. Like I've used those before, just stupid stuff like that. So maybe there'll be something like that here too. Maybe I'll recognize something that's like Taiwanese. But then these extra layers of like, this is actually almost just confusing. I don't even understand what this means, but maybe I'll look into it later. It was written, directed, and edited by Canadian filmmaker Rob Zabaz in his feature directorial debut. So I don't know how that works. Why is it a Canadian that made this Taiwanese movie? And he doesn't have his own wiki entry or anything, so he's clearly, no offense, Rob, clearly nobody. So I don't know what that means. And then on top of that, so that's doubly interesting, or also Canadian for anyone listening. That's why that's interesting. But then it also says the story is heavily inspired by Garth Ennis's comic book Crossed. So I haven't read that comic, but I love Garth Ennis. Preacher is my favorite comic of all time. So this movie's got like triple layers of things that I'm interested in. So.
Yeah, I am also a fan of Garth Ennis, but I didn't know that, and I hadn't even heard of that particular comic.
Just it was good enough just to know that you thought it was cool. That's like, all right, good enough. And then there's this extra thing, and then there's this other thing, and then there's this other thing. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on with this movie? So yeah, I'm extremely fucking interested in the sadness.
Well, having seen it, I can tell you that you will fucking like it. Like, there's just no way you're gonna watch this movie and go, eh. It's really fucking good. It's got a decent story. The special effects are really great. Even the CGI special effects in this are actually better than what I've seen from a lot of American stuff. Yeah, it's just all around a really good movie. The acting, I mean, I don't speak Taiwanese or Korean or any other language other than English, but I mean, their dialogue seems to all flow very well, so who knows what they're saying, but we have subtitles, and I love subtitles.
You know, that's a quick side story, but I just heard this the other day. Do you remember how in the first Resident Evil game, it had like really bad voice acting, like, Jill, don't open that door? And at the time, I thought it was supposed to be on purpose, like a B movie, but then Resident Evil 2 didn't do that, so it was clearly just a mistake. I've heard what happened is that the Japanese sound engineers, because this was like the mid-90s, you know, like it was still pretty new to have voice acting in games, so it was all done by the Japanese team. Supposedly, they picked the takes that had the best sounding cadence to them, even though they couldn't understand English. So that's why they picked, like, "You were almost a Jill sandwich." They're like, "Oh, it just sounded fun how he said that. Let's pick that one." So they literally, if they had picked at random, it would have been better. They like went out of their way. They didn't know they were doing this, but they were picking the worst possible takes because to their Japanese sensibilities, those were the ones that sounded the best and they were always the worst. And it's like The Room kind of, you know, it's just, how do you make something that bad? Just because you don't know what the fuck you're doing.
That's really fucking funny.
Yeah. And it works. Like it seems weird, but it's like, if you ever just need something to be hilarious, find somebody who doesn't understand the language and put them in charge. You're all set. Cause I think Tommy Wiseau, same thing. Like he's like, I don't know where he's from. He never wants to admit it, but not from America. You know?
I've never seen The Room, but I've only heard terrible things about it. So
it is. I mean, I guess that's getting off on a different tangent, but it lives up to the hype. It really is as bad as everyone says. It is very funny, but almost funny in like a mean way, because it's like, this guy didn't mean, now he pretends like, oh yeah, it was a dark comedy. No, it fucking wasn't. You're just incompetent. But for a competent film, yeah, let's watch The Sadness. So yeah, if we just do the basic pass fail, that is a big time pass. That's a pass plus plus. Man, that's a fucking good movie.
That is a gigantic pass. I mean, I've seen it before. Man, I forgot just how good it was.
And even, like, so well paced. Like, even you were saying there's that one little bit in the middle where they do take a bit of a breather with the presidential, you know, explaining the situation in the country. But even that led to the fucking president getting a grenade put in his fucking mouth and that exploded. So even that paid off.
Yeah, like the beginning of it, it's like, it's slow, like a little bit of exposition, whatever, but man, when shit starts, it fucking starts, and it just doesn't stop.
And yeah, I was saying to you too, as we were watching it, just, I'm just so glad that they don't do digital blood anymore, because I remember that was a big thing, I don't know, around 2012 or so, where it's like, it's hard to do multiple takes because you got to clean up the fake blood and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, well, too fucking bad because fake blood looks fake. Like CGI blood looks fake. This movie, no fucking CGI blood. It's just fucking gore everywhere. And it really helps. It makes a big difference.
North America still does CGI blood. You'll especially see it in, like, you know, John Wick movies and stuff like that. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I love those movies. But with these movies, I think that they aren't North American and that they are like going for broke, basically, like putting everything they can into it. You know, they're not skimping on something like the gore and the blood and the violence. It's just really well done.
Yeah, I really do. I am curious now about Taiwanese movies because, like, South Korea has already made its name for itself. You know, like, they're pretty famous between mostly horror movies and pop, strangely, but I guess, you know, like, even Squid Game or whatever, like, they're pretty established. Taiwan, I don't feel like is. So yeah, that's like that extra reason to make your movie be super memorable. And yeah, just, man, a lot of interesting shit going on here. So first off, I didn't do any big deep dives because I didn't want my nose to be in my phone the whole time I'm watching this. So I only looked up the guy a little, this Rob Jabaz guy. And it's just really strange. He's not Chinese. He's definitely Canadian-ass Canadian white dude. He's from Mississauga, which is like next door to where we are right now. And I guess you kind of get the story, though, just from his little basic biography on IMDb, that he was an animator who started doing work in Taiwan. And then he moved on to making commercials and music videos in Taiwan. And then I guess worked his way up to a movie. But it's even weird to see in the credits, every single credit that just went by is a fully Chinese name except him. So, I don't know. Interesting. But that's all I know is that seems like that's the basics of his life. But he still doesn't have his own wiki page. So he's almost made it to prominence. But however this happened, however this came together, it seemed like it worked out pretty fucking well.
And the funny thing is, like, I've said, and I'll say it a million times, like, I can't stand Canadian productions.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it all looks like made for TV and almost, if you will, fake. It's not as polished as, like, North American stuff. So this guy being Canadian, going and making a movie like this in Taiwan, it looks like something that America could have done. You know, like, it was polished, it was well done, and it didn't look like shit, for lack of a better term. I would watch a follow-up. Like, I mean, I know that they're not going to do, like, the Sadness Part 2 or, you know, Ultra Sadness or something stupid like that. But this was so good that if this guy followed up and made another horror movie, maybe he has. I don't know. I didn't look. But if he does, I'm there for it. Like, this was, you know, recommended to me. And, you know, I sat on it for, like, several months before actually watching it. And, man, I'm kind of glad that I waited.
By the way, if there's any random noises in the background, there's just construction going on in this building. But yeah, I wonder that too. I mean, I'm just inferring this totally, but obviously, yeah, like you're saying, Canadian shit looks like trash. It's just awful. We have an occasional good Canadian movie, but it's not common.
Ginger Snaps.
Yeah, Ginger Snaps is the only one, really. So yeah, obviously having the Taiwanese film industry behind him really worked out well. But I wonder if it went the other way too. I wonder if the fact that he's North American kind of helped convince them to make a movie this fucking crazy. Like, I wonder if he brought some of his, like, North American horror movie upbringing to them. And, you know, it's just like, let's do it. Let's just fucking, like, I wonder if the little bit that I know, obviously, like, North American culture is more individualistic, and over in Asia, it's more communal. So maybe, like, a Chinese director wouldn't have, or a Taiwanese director wouldn't have that boldness to be like, we should do this. Where a North American is like, well, what do we care? Fuck it. Let's just do it.
Like, this looks like the sort of thing that would have been made in Taiwan or Asia, but as, like, an animated movie, you know, like, something that they threw together, sort of like Akira, how Akira is, like, this super awesome fucking anime movie that everyone loves. Like, if this was made as an animated movie and not a normal movie, then it would be revered like that. Whereas this guy came from Canada and he's like, hey, I have an idea. And they're like, oh, that sounds really fucked up. We should make that shit. And they did. And like, I'm glad. Like, it's so fucking good.
Funny name too, just the Sadness. I mean, because yeah, like, it is, if anything, the opposite. That I really did like that explanation that the guy gave. It was a bit of a lore dump at the end, but the virologist, I liked how he explained about your limbic system, that, like, you're just the try not to blink, you know, or try not to breathe, try not to whatever, try not to sneeze. You have to. And that's just how these people are now. Just, you have to fuck that chick's eye socket. You have to. That was so funny too, because that was the one thing I knew about this movie just from you talking earlier today. So as that scene was coming up where there's this lady in a wheelchair and her eye's already injured, and there's a horrible rapist man who's been infected standing in front of her, and I was just like, uh-oh, here's that scene. I loved that guy though. That's one thing that's interesting is, like, in real life, you know, obviously good people are interesting and evil people are like a pain in the ass. It's like, just stop it. But in movies, it's the opposite. You know, in movies, I don't need a good guy. In movies, I just want someone to be doing interesting things. I don't care if it's evil. So I loved that guy who was the train rapist, crazy guy. Like, he was just so interesting. Or even the virologist infecting all the babies. It's like, yeah, that's kind of fucked up. And he admitted at the end, he kind of wanted to do it. But also it sort of made sense, you know, just infect all the babies with the virus. And if one of them's immune, great. And it's like, yeah, like, I'm just, that's an interesting thing to do. I don't care if it's the right thing or the wrong thing. I just want an interesting thing.
Like, the whole final girl thing. Everyone roots for the final girl. Like, you get your Jamie Lee Curtis, and you've got your, what's her name, who plays Sidney Prescott. You've got your Nancy's from Nightmare on Elm Street. You know, they end up in multiple movies, and everyone kind of roots for them, and like, yay, they got out alive. And I'm like, yeah, it's great that they got out alive, because that means that that killer is going to come back for a sequel and kill even more people. Okay. And, you know, I root for the horror guys. Like, I root for the Art the Clowns and the Freddy Kruegers and the Jason Voorhees and these types of people. Like, I don't look out for the good guys. Like, I don't give a fuck about the good guys. They just tie the sequels so that, you know, you've got that next installment of violence coming up.
Yeah, look, if anybody remembers, we have an old episode where we were just talking about horror movie ideas, and one of them was basically a Jason Voorhees type of thing. And I started writing that story. I never finished it, but I've got all the notes figured out. And spoiler for if this ever gets done someday, the Jason type character in the movie kills everybody, gets a Necronomicon book to bring them all back to life, kills them all again. There is no final girl. Nobody lives. Because I don't need anyone to live. I don't give a fuck about people living.
That's always the best. And by the way, shout out to Retard Stab Camp.
Yeah, that's more like the art film. That's the thinker. The Jason one is more of just a straight up hacker to death movie. So the other thing that I thought was neat about this, well, first off, just my, you know, I've only been to Taiwan once, but I was there for 3 months. You know, I just stayed there for my 3 month visa in Taipei. So if stuff that I picked up while I was there, scooters, just tons of scooters everywhere. It's like 50% scooter traffic, and that you could definitely see in this movie, scooters everywhere. I liked that because it was so hot there. I was there in the summer, and I've never been so hot in my life being from Canada. I was just sweating to death, and that worked great in this because everybody was also sweating to death, but also that was the sign that they were changing, but it helps like mask it because everybody's sweating because it's hot as fuck. And it's just cool to see how compact and mountainous everything was, because that's how it is there. The only thing I didn't see that I expected to see is 7-Eleven and Family Mart, because they're everywhere. This guy must have gone out of his way not to film a 7-Eleven.
Might have been a branding thing or a licensing thing. Like, maybe he wasn't allowed to do that for whatever reason.
Yeah, because you really would. If you were just filming randomly, you'd just get one in their shop by accident. So it was funny to notice that there were none. But the other thing I thought was kind of interesting, so I mean, I only have the vaguest understanding of these different countries and where they're at politically, but I know like Taiwan is, you know, everyone speaks Chinese and all the stuff is written in Chinese. And when you're like, I did go through the Shanghai airport to get there, and China, it's this creepy thing where China considers Taiwan part of China. Like even in the airport, it said international/Taiwan, because they know that I'll think of it as international, but they don't want to admit that it's international. Like, even the signs are creepy in China. Like, the little bit that I picked up, basically, okay, how can I put this? Is how censored are the different countries? So Japan is pretty, pretty all out. They're kind of insane. They'll do anything. Like, you know, they have comic books literally in the store. You can just go in and buy a big anthology comic that is all like comic books about Lolita stuff, you know, stuff that would be way illegal anywhere except Japan. But on the other hand, Japan does still have everything censored. You know, they can't show genitals. Everything is still blurred. So they're in this weird middle ground where they're censored, but they're also insane. And then South Korea is way more censored. It's like you can't get onto the internet in South Korea unless you supply your phone number to the government. And I didn't realize that at first because I had a VPN. It was only when my VPN wasn't on, I couldn't even go on YouTube. Like, you know, I couldn't watch an 18 plus YouTube video without giving my phone number to the government. But luckily, I just set my VPN to a different country and it was fine. But also, there's no porn in South Korea. Like, Japan's porn industry is huge, yet censored. South Korea, none. I didn't realize till then. And then I looked it up and it's like, oh yeah, like you just can't. It's just illegal. You can't make porn in South Korea. So that's a level of censoring that we don't have. Then Taiwan, it was this weird middle ground. Oh, well, China is just fucked. China, I couldn't get on the internet at all, even in the airport, because it's China, you know? So yeah, when I got to Taiwan, like, it does seem kind of weird to filter all this through the lens of porn, but porn is such a good indicator of what a country is like, because, you know, like, for instance, that there was just no porn in South Korea. You're like, that's good to know. That's like, all right, that's where we're at now. That's what's going on. So I didn't know anything about Taiwan. I only went there because I had to kill some more time because it was the middle of summer and the flights were expensive. I just needed to wait till fall to get a cheap flight back to Canada. So I was like, okay, Taiwan, let's go. I literally just picked it at random. So I didn't know anything about it. Even the stuff about China, I kind of knew that, but I learned more about it when I got there. But I was like, all right, well, I know a lot about Japanese porn, just growing up with Japanese everything. And I was learning about South Korean porn. What's the deal in Taiwan? And it's really weird. I could never quite get my finger on it, where there's not like really an industry for it in Taiwan. And I could find these really strange, like, where people make their own porn in North America, you know, like not OnlyFans, but like clips for sale, that type of thing. that's what most of the Taiwanese porn seemed to be. It was like really low budget, just people kind of make it themselves. And some of it was really weird, like tape on the nipples and like just like dildos and like no actual porn, really. But then as I dug deeper, it's like, okay, there is some Taiwanese like normal porn, but it's like it's not illegal, but it's just not, they just kind of don't do that. So they're just in some weird middle ground. And if they ever get taken over officially by China, you can forget about it. That's all gone. So anyway, the reason I'm yammering about this is because watching that movie, one of the big elements of when people get infected is let's go rape people. And there are some parts in that movie that were like literal, like you just see women getting fucked. And I was just thinking like, that's interesting because I'll have to keep my eye peeled in South Korean movies. Because South Korean movies are like super slick and really well done, and they seem to have no problem with violence. But I bet those scenes wouldn't be in a South Korean movie. I don't know if they even legally can do it in South Korea. And then in Japan, they could. And in North America, of course, we don't give a fuck about anything. So I just thought that was interesting that like I'm starting to learn a bit about the political situations of these countries. And basically, I hope Taiwan always gets to stay independent because that movie was fucking cool. And if they ever become part of China, we'll never see a movie like that again. It's never going to happen. Fucking China.
I'm kind of stuck on the whole South Korea thing. Like, you were in South Korea and there was no porn.
Yeah, and like,
what did you strangle your dick to? Yeah.
Well, apparently, though, like, everybody just does the same thing I did. Like, they just have a VPN and they just set it to a different country and that's it. But I guess, like, I did learn a bit about, with comic books, kind of that's what they do for porn. Is like South Korean comic books are way different from North American and Japanese comics because they're all digital, like they're all only on your phone. There's no physical stuff. So it's like a big long strip that just never stops. You just scroll along it with your phone. And there's tons of porn comics. They're not all porn comics, but a lot of them are. And you can really tell that it's like more realistically drawn than in Japan because it's pretty clear that they're like tracing over normal porn. But they can't have normal porn. They can only have the cartoon porn. But then it is still censored, but they don't censor it like in Japan with the pixelating. Instead, it's just a white spot. So if you see a vagina, it's just a white circle. And if you see a dick, it's just a white, like...
banana-shaped thing.
Yeah. But it's kind of neat in a way because it's like as a metaphor for a boner, it's like looks like a fucking lightsaber. And it's like, that is what a boner feels like. You know? So it's kind of neat in a weird way. But it's like also weird if you, for some reason, don't have a VPN and you're just stuck with whatever South Korea wants to give you. You just got to read these weird censored porn comics. And that's like all they got.
So you could say that they were made with love.
But also, again, like you can really see the levels of like what's acceptable and what isn't, but it's still weird. It's so that also that movie made me think about the classic duality, especially of America, where they love violence and hate sex, kind of, right? You know, it's like you can have as much violence as you want, but they're real weird about sex. And it feels that way in South Korea also, where they make sure that it's very clear all the characters are legal age, which is not the case in Japan. But there's like this misogyny in South Korean comics that is wild. It's out of control. Like, it's way more than I've seen in anyone else's media of any kind. But at the same time, it's like censored and it's all responsible of like, we're all adults here. Everything's fine here. And oh, we'll censor all the genitals and stuff. Now put your head in this toilet, woman, because I hate you. like I don't know. Something is going on under the surface in South Korea that is fucked up.
That has to be the quote at the beginning of this podcast. Put your head in this toilet.
Yeah, I don't know. I would recommend it. I would recommend go read some South Korean porn comics because it is really different than anything that we have. Or that Japan has even. It's its own unique thing and it's not healthy. it's fucking weird.
So what are some things that you noticed in the sadness that, like key things that you saw that sort of stuck out to you? Like for me, for instance, when the guy, after he had his fingers cut off and he's got the little fucking scooter and he's zooming around, you know, at one point he stops and there's like a baby carriage and it's just filled with gore. There's no baby. It's just gore in this fucking carriage.
Yeah, like I was saying when we watched it that it kind of reminded me of the Evil Dead remake in how much blood was everywhere, but now that I think about it, it's maybe more like Dead Alive or whatever, or Brain Dead. Like, you remember that part where he takes the lawnmower into the church and there's so there's so many body parts everywhere that he's slipping on them? Like, it was that silly level of just body parts, but it wasn't silly. It was like for real version of that. And it's like, holy fuck.
And there was that one comic part too, not really funny, haha, but like when that guy on the subway first started stabbing people, and he stabbed that one guy in the neck, and it was like anime blood spray all the way up to the ceiling. Like, but then a few scenes later, someone gets, you know, hacked in the head with an axe, and, you know, there's like little squirts of blood, but not like there was with that one guy.
Yeah, it was like surprisingly realistic, really. That was the one part that was a little over the top. And even that, if they had just toned it down a little bit, it would probably be fine. Because I always hear about how much, like, you don't realize how much blood is really in someone until, or like suicide, like crime scene photos and stuff. You're like, how did that much blood come out of one person? But we're just blood bags. We're full of blood. But yeah, also, I guess it ties in a bit to Terrifier that we watched a couple episodes back, in just like, let's not insinuate the violence. Let's just show it. Let's just show a smashed in head. Let's just show all the body parts.
Yeah, we really are kind of going for broke with this, you know, I guess we'll call it a season. You know, we're sort of saying it's Redux or whatever. But, you know, we've managed so far to pick, aside from one shitty movie, movies that are just willing to show you like everything. Like, there's nothing left to the imagination, because, you know, everything's getting pounded in front of you.
Yeah, and I guess that's where this also kind of reminds me of Terrifier, in that sense of like, I do feel like horror movies, they really don't need comic relief, because the comic relief is how insane they are, you know? Like, again, I don't know, I'm sure there's people out there that don't laugh at gore, but I totally do. And this movie was like that for sure. Like, I love those moments where it just goes that one step further than you ever expected it to go. Where, like, so there's these kids that are infected with the virus, and they're beating this man to death, and it's really like
with, like, a bat.
Yeah, and that one was very realistic of like, yeah, he really looks like he's just been being beaten by a bat. But then our hero goes and tries to save the guy, which, if I learned anything from this movie, it's don't bother trying to save anybody. What's the fucking point? So if I fear that you're infected, Ray, I might let you go. I might just run away.
I mean, I'll catch you, but run.
Fair enough. All right, we've made a deal. Gentleman's agreement. But yeah, he goes to try to save this guy, and then he realizes the guy's also infected, and he was loving getting beat up. And he's like, why'd you chase him away? I just about came. I was about to come from getting beaten to death. And like, that's like a line that it's like, I wouldn't have guessed that in 100 tries that he was going to say that.
I figured he'd be infected, you know, when I first saw this, but I definitely didn't expect him to say, you know, oh man, I'm so hurt, I just about jizzed, like something like that, you know. It was unexpected, but funny, very funny.
And that dude who was like the train molester, like, I loved that character because, you know, that's one of those things that, like, you hear these like stereotypical things about, like, oh, you know, you can buy panties from a vending machine in Japan, and oh, there's all these train molesters. And then you get there and it's like, some stuff is more real than others, like with the buying panties out of a vending machine.
You can,
but it's like you got to find a creepy porn store in like Osaka, which is a bit of a scummy town to begin with. And then, yeah, you can, but it's not like just common. However, the train molester thing really is common. Like, there's signs I don't know how commonly it happens, but it used to happen enough that now there's signs everywhere. There's special train cars that men can't go on. There's just like notices all over the place about don't be a molester. And yeah, not only in Japan, but South Korea had a ton of those too. And yeah, there's so many. Or like alarms. Like in South Korea, every single washroom had a big red alarm button that you could press. And I guess, were those in Taiwan too? Yeah, because I'm kind of remembering like little cartoons of like a mom and a kid, you know, like being helped by police. Because it's clear that these buttons are not for men. They're for women to save themselves from men. So it's like good that there's an alarm in every single public washroom. But it's also creepy that you need an alarm in every single public washroom. Like, calm down, Asian men. What the fuck? But it made that character. I'm like, yeah, I bet that's completely realistic, that he's just like trying to chat up this chick on the train because he's a fucking old creep. But then again, once he turned infected and now he just wants to be a super rapist, now he's my favorite because I just want something interesting to happen in a movie. I don't care if you're evil.
I'm totally picturing someone pushing one of these buttons in one of these women's restrooms in Japan, and all of a sudden the pervert police come in running in with like a cock cage to put on this guy. Like, put it down, fella. You're coming with us.
Man, it really makes you think, like, things must have been bad. I don't know, back in, like, the 80s and the 90s and stuff. Like, geez, brutal. And even just the communal nature of it. It is creepy in a different, weird way. But it's so good for a zombie movie of just, like, everyone packed in and everyone, like, contained. It is kind of more appropriate, I feel like, to a zombie scenario than North America, where we've got, you know, just too much space, not enough people, you know?
Yeah, I mean, going back to it, though, like, I was very pleased on a second viewing of this movie. Like, this is the second time I've seen this. And I enjoyed it as much or more, maybe, than the first time. And it's so funny, too, because people that watch movies, like normal movies, and then they watch the odd horror movie and they're all super shocked, you know, oh, I watched Friday the 13th Part 3, or I watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Those movies are good movies, but they're nowhere near as graphic and violent as some of the stuff we've been watching lately. They're just all over the place.
And I feel like it's not inappropriate, you know? Like if anything, I used to always think that about our movies, you know? Like, in some ways, the 70s movies were more brutal, like the I Spit on Your Grave type movies. Because I used to always think, like, with the 80s and especially the 90s, like, why are we going halfway? If you're going to make a horror movie about people getting cut in half and their heads cut off, how come Jason's not raping a corpse? And then in this movie, yeah, they are totally just raping people because it all just goes together. Like, I feel like, why put your foot on the brake? Just fucking go for it. And yeah, these movies we've been watching lately, they just fucking go for it. And it's fine. It's what a horror movie is supposed to be.
And these actors in this particular movie, if they weren't having the time of their lives, like, what the fuck were they even doing? Because it looked like they were having a blast.
Yeah, I do think that is kind of the other thing that sort of the difference between, I guess, horror movie fans and non-horror movie fans is it's like a little wink and a nod to the audience. It's like we've all seen horror movies before and we all get that this is a movie and that these are special effects. So it's like funny to like the fucking virologist in this, where I was kind of trying to figure out what does cause a person to get infected. And I kind of figured, like, this main character, she must be immune because there's no way she'd survive this long. And it turns out she is. But then to kind of, like, as my thoughts are going through this of, like, what does it take to get infected? The virologist at the end, he gets his foot cut off with an axe. And then one of the zombies pukes bile into his foot. And it's like, well, he's infected. You know? And, like, that, to me, that feels like, I don't know, a joke's the wrong word. But it's like it is like a little wink from the filmmaker of like, yeah, you were probably thinking about this, right? Well, here you go. This guy's infected. You know?
And the names in this movie were funny, too, because like this is obviously, I mean, it's a Taiwanese/Asian movie. I was kind of expecting those types of names, like, you know, maybe Han, because Han, I think, is a typical Asian male name.
Mr. Han.
Yeah, like something, you know, like something like that. But all the names that they said in the movie, like the three that stand out to me are Jim, Kat, and Molly. I mean, maybe you might get one of those, but you're not getting three like that.
That is, yeah, I guess that's one thing I didn't pick up on in Taiwan. I'm not sure how it goes with that, but I did notice that even just from making friends in Vancouver at my various jobs, I had a bunch of Asian friends, and I did notice that Japanese people always keep their name, but South Korean people do take North American names. So I'm not sure how it works in Taiwan, but even what they were saying in the movie, as opposed to the subtitles, quite sure those weren't their names.
Yeah, I mean, at my old job, I dealt with a lot of people from different places, you know, like very multicultural, you know, immigrated people who are coming basically to that specific thing without naming the name of the place. And people would come to the desk to sign out access cards for the day so they could get into the building. And we would have to look their name up in the system. We would look at their ID and it would say, like, you know, whatever Asian name, whatever African name, whatever. And nothing would come up. And we came to learn oh, do you have a preferred name? And, you know, it's always like, you know, Joe or Catherine or, you know, something like that. And I was like, but your ID has to match.
Right.
But it never did. It was always like Lulu and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, because I remember I noticed that, like, at my my coffee shop job in Vancouver, like, I had a Japanese friend and his name was Yoshikazu. And then our boss was South Korean and his name was James. I was like, bitch, your name's not James. But, oh, I like in YouTube, it just came up. The sadness, 2021, head exploding scene.
Yeah, there's this a conversation with Rob Jabaz, the whitest dude I've seen in ages.
Yeah, I'll definitely look some of this up on my own time because I'm a little curious how he got this gig. But yeah, so I hope all my rambling about, I don't know, various levels of censorship and what's allowed in different countries made some kind of sense. Because again, I only half know what I'm talking about. Like, I haven't really dug deep into this stuff. It's just what I noticed while I was there. But yeah, I do love watching these movies from these different areas. And yeah, mainly, I guess I'm going to keep an eye on South Korean movies from here on in because they seem to have no problem with violence. But just seeing how sexual the sadness got once in a while, I just like, I bet South Korea just doesn't, but I haven't noticed yet. So we'll see.
Have you seen I Saw the Devil?
No.
It's a pretty good movie. So it's about this, there's a serial killer who he hunts women. And so one of the women who he catches and kills, or almost kills, is like the sister of like this special investigator. So the special investigator figures out who the serial killer is and he finds him and he does all these terrible things to him, like puts him in the hospital basically, you know, and then he heals up and he gets out of the hospital, you know, he hasn't been arrested or anything. That's not the goal here. So he gets out of the hospital and he's, you know, healing up or whatever. And then the special investigator shows up again, finds him and fucking does the same thing again, just beats him up and puts him back in the hospital again. And this goes throughout the movie until, you know, the end, which is, you know, a pretty crazy ending. But it was a good movie.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I've had that thought many times of like, yeah, just continuously torture someone forever. Like, it's sort of unsatisfying if you just kill somebody in your revenge because then they're just dead and it's over.
Yeah, good movie. That was I Saw the Devil. But this, The Sadness, like, you know, I'm glad I own it because I'll definitely go back to it again.
Okay, so originally in the movie, the virus was supposed to be indicated by, like, profuse crying. Like, the infected people were supposed to be crying and that's how you would know. And then we had all these, like, I had all these ideas of, like, you know, people crying because they were scared, and then people, like normal people thinking, oh no, like those people are infected too, you know, like children crying in the hospital and then people wanting to kill the children or something. But then when we started doing the movie, like I forgot that that was something we were supposed to do. And then I was like, so many of them weren't crying. And I was like, oh damn, well, we can't go back. So let's just keep going. And then I prepared another answer for the question that the film is named after the finale, essentially. That's my new answer.
All right, fast forward to the next day. So on the way home yesterday, I listened to an interview with noted Canadian Rob Jabaz. So let's fill everyone in now that I know why. Because, you know, as we were saying about that movie, it was like one of these names is not like the other. There's this sea of Taiwanese names and this one fucking Canadian guy. So it turns out the story is he moved to Taiwan when he was like 25. He was already like an animator. Just to see the world, just to go somewhere, just to try some stuff. And he just stayed there. He just had been there for like 13 years. And he worked for this company where he was doing like advertising, little like commercials and music videos and random stuff. And he kind of felt like he had the skills that he could make a movie, but he just didn't have that ambition to really push to try to make it. But he's like, if it ever happened, you know, I could probably do it. So his boss for his overall big conglomerate that he worked for, this dude sounds awesome. We were saying as we watched it, like, they must have, you know, filmed this right before COVID if it came out in 2021 and, like, weird timing. Turns out they didn't film it before COVID. They just had a lockdown immediately in Taiwan. So COVID wasn't a problem in the early days. Like, they just managed to avoid early COVID. They just locked the whole country down. But he was already there. And his rich-ass boss deliberately wanted to make a movie about COVID stuff because he's like, man, if you look right now, like Contagion and these old ass stupid movies are like number one on iTunes because everyone's freaked out about COVID. If we film a movie right now, it'll be out, you know, in like 12 months when there's nothing in theaters because no one else has any movies because they are all on lockdown. We can be the only ones in the theater. So it's like, what a genius man, whoever his boss is, you know, this millionaire guy who just like has these ideas. And he got Rob to write the script, which was loosely based on the Garth Ennis comic. Although apparently in the Garth Ennis comic, they're a lot more like cavemen or whatever. So Rob's big thing was, let's make them more, talk more and more, you know, more like characters to them, which was one of the coolest parts of that movie. And sorry, it's just me in a one-sided conversation here, but I'm just regaling Ray.
I'm fucking good with it. I really don't care.
So he wrote this script that is only very loosely based, obviously, on the Garth Ennis thing. It's mainly just the idea that, you know, you can't, you know, stop your primal urges anymore. But in this version, it's obviously set in Taiwan, but also everybody's more, still more together, and which he kind of thinks makes it scarier, which I think maybe is true, like that you can, they can talk to you more and they can explain that they're going to rip your tits off. So he was just going to write the script and that was it. He said he wrote it real fast and just someone else was going to make it. But then as his boss was doing all the figuring out who's going to make this, he's like, well, you know, Rob, why don't you do it? Like, you know, you make all these little music videos and shit. You know, you could probably pull this off. So this timid little Canadian boy from Mississauga, he did agree to direct it. But he said he needed to have final say on everything. He needed to do final cut of the movie. And his boss was like, yeah, sure, why not? And one of his things was he made sure the special effects crew always had blood on set. And then he was like, I know that sounds funny, but I'm serious. Like, if I want to do something, I cannot have you guys say we're not ready to do it. We got to be ready at all times. I want buckets of blood everywhere. I want gallons of it to be ready to go. So that's funny. But the other thing that I thought was neat is we were kind of pontificating about did the North American influence have an effect on how that movie turned out? And according to old Rob, it did, because he said most Taiwanese horror movies, which there are some, but obviously we don't know much about that scene yet, he said they generally are kind of timid. They're not that crazy. You're not going to have a garbage can full of dead babies, probably. So his North American sensibilities really did push the movie farther than normal. But it kind of wasn't a great thing for the domestic market. That movie actually didn't make its money back in the theaters in Taiwan. And he thinks it's maybe because it was a little too much for them. But then it became a huge hit on like horror festival circuit and stuff, because North America was like, fuck yeah. But in Taiwan, apparently it was a little much.
Shudder definitely helped in North America too, because Shudder, the streaming service for horror geeks, they put this on their, their streaming service. And they're partially responsible for getting it, the physical media release, first through Raven Banner and then through one of the partner labels that Vinegar Syndrome works with. So that's how it got popular in North America, as opposed to, you know, the we didn't get a theatrical release.
Right.
Yeah, so that's where it's in a weird spot, too, where, like, you know, this guy, he doesn't have his own Wikipedia page. His IMDb is real scant. And it's like he'll probably be able to direct another movie. He obviously did a good job, although he said it was mega stressful. They filmed it in like 28 days, and he said it was like not fun to do. Like, he's glad with how it turned out, but he said it was just like incredibly stressful to be in charge of everybody. I guess also because he wasn't like I'm going to go to film school and I want to be a director. It just kind of fell into his lap. So he said he'd be happy to do it again, but he's really not sure what'll happen, because this movie, even though it's a critical hit, didn't exactly set the world on fire. So it's not guaranteed. They're not banging down his door to make another movie. But they should. I hope they do. So there's a good chance he'll direct another movie, but it's not. Right now he's in that limbo in between of like, hopefully. But anyway, so that's the story of how Rob Jabez from Mississauga, Ontario, made a fucking super cool, you know what, even though it's the only Taiwanese horror movie I've ever seen, I'm going to say the best one.
Absolutely. It's the best Taiwanese movie.
Yeah, probably.
Not even just horror genre. Like, the best movie that came out of Taiwan. Like, their toys are great. Their movies, like, this movie is better than toys.
That was funny. Actually, I was doing a little hike in Taiwan, and I ran into, it was a Taiwanese guy and an American dude that were on the same hike, and they were stopping to drink, have a drink of water in their little canteens, because it's hot as fuck there. So they just were like, hey, how, where are you from? Whatever. We had our little chat. And the guy from Taiwan did ask, so, hey, what brings you to Taipei? And I was like, to be honest, I didn't know anything about Taipei, just made in Taiwan. That's all I knew. And he's like, that's fair. And then I did learn more about it while I was there, about like specifically this one guy who was just day drinking, this dude in his 50s who was just drinking at a convenience store, and his English was pretty good, and he just also just started chatting to me, and he was telling me, it was really kind of interesting, and now that we're this deep into the podcast, if you're still here, fuck it, you can listen to me talk about Taiwan for a second, where it's like, South Korea definitely has like an antagonistic relationship with Japan, because historically they Japan fucked them up real bad. Where Taiwan doesn't. Taiwan really likes Japan, and kind of you aspire to move to Japan to be a tech guy or whatever. And you can even just feel it in their pop culture. They love anime and video games and stuff way more so than South Korea. But he also said that Taiwan, in his opinion, is also like kind of the carriers of Chinese culture. Like they're keeping Chinese culture going, because whatever version of Chinese culture is happening in China is this weird, censored, super government approved, like that's not the cool part about Chinese culture, where Taiwan is. And I can only take his word for it, but it felt that way when I was there. Like passing through China felt bad. Getting to Taiwan felt good. So basically Taiwan's the best. They love Japan and they're the cool part of China. They're just the best part of Asia. They're just cool. I like Taiwan a lot. And Rob Jabaz made their, it's the Canadian-Taiwanese connection. Their best movie will be a Canadian co-production.
So here's the list. We are pro-Taipei. We are pro-Taiwan. We are pro-Rob Jabaz, even though it's a fucking lame last name.
Yeah, get a new name, Rob.
And we are pro-the sadness.
Yeah, totally.